Oh, I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish, cause I eat me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is December 17th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Popeye and the Paperclip. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Bob Edmonds. He's a third-year emergency medicine resident at the University of Missouri at Kansas City. And prior to medical school, Bob graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy. And when he completes his training, he will be rejoining the Air Force for 9 years as an emergency medicine physician. In his spare time, he enjoys reading, finding random facts online, and hanging out with his wife and son. Welcome to the SGEM, Bob.
Hey, Ken. It's great to be on the show.
How are things in Missouri?
They're great. We're getting ready for Christmas and hoping our little guy enjoys some of the presents Santa's going to bring.
Do you have any snow down there yet?
Not yet.
We do not have any snow up here in Canada. At least in my area, we have no snow, and it's December 17th. Pretty incredible.
Thank you, global warming.
Well, as people can probably tell, I'm a little bit excited today because we have something special for the SGEMers. Today, it's going to be an SGEM Extra Holiday Edition. Now, we've done these in the past during the holiday season. Last year, we looked at a paper by Chan et al. On early goal-directed dating.
Yeah, this was a review of an early goal-directed dating protocol in the treatment of singledom and severe loneliness for physicians.
It was a follow-up to the Purdy and Johnson publication in the CMAJ on the Canadian Is This a Date decision tool. Now, this episode was in the spirit of the British Medical Journal Holiday Edition that is put out every year at this time.
Yeah, those BMJ Holiday Editions are fantastic. Being in the Air Force, one of my personal favorites is the parachute trial, where they examine parachute use to prevent death and major trauma related to gravitational challenge. Systematic review of randomized controlled trials, BMJ 2003.
Yeah, that was an excellent trial, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The objective of the parachute trial was, quote, to determine whether parachutes are effective in preventing major trauma related to gravitational challenge, end quote.
Yeah, and their main outcome was measurement of death or major trauma defined as an injury severity score of greater than 15.
Yeah, they unfortunately were unable to identify any RCTs of parachutes as an intervention to prevent death and major trauma. Although I can personally provide my own anecdotal experience of my 5 parachute jumps, which I survived without trauma or death, as well as observations of about 100 other parachuters' jumps from my jump class at the academy.
Yeah, and they suggested that there are case reports, anecdotal evidence, and observational data of people surviving without a parachute or the parachute not opening correctly.
Yeah, parachute use is also associated with adverse effects due to the failure of the parachute and iatrogenic injuries. So they suggested a double-blind randomized crossover trial with the advocates of evidence-based medicine being the volunteers. To date, they unfortunately have 0 volunteers.
The SGEM has actually done a couple of BMJ Holiday Edition articles over the years. The first one, SGEM number 6, reviewed the study called Orthopedic Surgeons, As Strong as an Ox and Almost Twice as Clever, a multi-centered prospective comparative study by Subramaniam et al.
Their conclusions were, male orthopedic surgeons have greater intelligence and grip strength than their male anesthetic colleagues, who should find new ways to make fun of their orthopedic friends.
And the other BMJ holiday article covered on the SGEM was episode number 23, called Pain Over Speed Bumps in Diagnosis of Acute Appendicitis, a Diagnostic Accuracy Study by Ashdown et al.
Interestingly, lack of pain over a speed bump had the best negative likelihood ratio of 0.1 and outperformed migratory pain, nausea, vomiting, and rebound tenderness.
It is always fun to review those BMJ holiday articles, but let's get the SGEM holiday article started with a case.
Sure. So a 34-year-old former sailor presents to his primary care provider for routine employment screening. He asks if he should consider eating lots of spinach to make him strong and healthy. He is noted to enjoy pipe smoking and to have disproportionately developed forearms.
And for many decades, spinach has been promoted as a food with super high iron content. It's also part of pop culture that Popeye the Sailor Man ate spinach for the iron to make him strong.
There's been a story about spinach, iron, and Popeye that has been circulating for decades. It has been told by many academics and reproduced in many books. However, it turns out the story is complicated and not accurate.
Yeah, and it's referred to as the Spinach, Popeye, Iron, and Decimal Error Story, or SPIDES. And I first heard of this story by reading a book called The Half-Life of Facts while on a cruise for my 20th wedding anniversary. It was a break from reading all the primary literature.
Yet another benefit of choosing emergency medicine for any students out there, you actually get time to take breaks and have a life.
Complexity scientist Samuel Arbisman wrote the book, and he's been a fellow at Harvard and the University of Colorado. He also writes for the New York Times and a few other magazines and newspapers.
Sounds like a pretty sharp guy.
Yeah. And in this book, this Half-Life of Facts, he tells the story about Popeye and this decimal point error made in the calculation of iron content of spinach. Apparently, back in the 1870s, a German scientist named von Wolf was measuring the iron content of vegetables, including spinach.
Yeah, this is where the infamous decimal point error was allegedly made, changing the magnitude of iron in spinach to be tenfold greater.
And this incorrect amount of iron per 100-gram serving would be comparable to eating a small piece of a paperclip, hence the paperclip reference. Well, the author goes on to say that when Popeye was created in the early 20th century, he was shown to eat spinach for his strength due to its health properties.
Yeah, the story goes that this transcription error by the German chemist was supposedly corrected way back in the 1930s, but the error wasn't corrected until after Popeye was already in the press. This led, in turn, to decades of mistaken public belief about spinach's iron content.
In the book, there was an attempt to debunk the myth by an article in the British Medical Journal, and I actually looked up the reference in the back of the book to find it was a paper called Fake by T.J. Hamblin, published in the BMJ, 1981. Unfortunately, I didn't go back and actually pull the original BMJ article to look into the matter further when I got back from this anniversary cruise.
Yeah, that's why it's always important to go back to the primary literature.
Yeah, yes, go back to the primary literature, Ken. Yes, excellent advice. And you know what? I've actually given that advice to students and I should have followed it because I've used that story to illustrate how long it can take for knowledge translation. And the talk I give is actually called Popeye and the Paperclip. And the story was used to demonstrate my point about knowledge translation at the SMAC conference in Chicago, on the Reality Check podcast earlier this year, and at other meetings.
Yeah, it was on the Reality Check podcast that I heard you tell the story. Having a major in biochem, I found it odd that a German chemist would make such a gross error, so I started to check it out. It was late night on a night shift around 5 a.m., and everybody's disposition was pretty much done, so I hopped on Google, and after a few minutes of searching, I found a link to an article explaining how this SPIDES story was not true and that the good Dr. von Wolf was innocent.
Yeah, and then you contacted me, and what was my response there, Bob?
Well, in good Canadian tradition, you were extremely polite and offered me to come onto the show to talk about what I found.
Absolutely, and I think this is a really important concept, especially in medicine. I mean, you know, we're not going to get it right all the time. We can be fooled, we can misinterpret the data, and even get some things wrong. And what matters most is how we respond and deal with the situation when we do make a mistake.
Yes, I think it just goes to show how pervasive a belief or practice can become after being retold repeatedly. It's almost as if the numerousness of sources stating a claim can help elevate a myth to a super myth, so it becomes a false claim that's so widely held to be true that no one believes it could even possibly be false, and ends up growing resistant to attempts to disprove it despite good evidence.
So, Bob, in the spirit of the holidays, correcting a previous error and encouraging skepticism, I wanted to do an SGEM on Popeye and the paperclip story. So let's give a clinical question that we're going to try to answer.
So is spinach high in iron, and is that where Popeye gets his strength?
And what reference are we going to use to try to answer this clinical question?
So we're going to go a little bit outside of the usual medical literature. We're going to read from a criminologist, Dr. Mike Sutton, Spinach, Iron, and Popeye, Ironic Lessons from Biochemistry and History on the Importance of Healthy Eating, Healthy Skepticism, and Adequate Citation. And this was published in the Internet Journal of Criminology, a free open access journal.
So who is Dr. Mike Sutton?
So he's a lawyer in England with a PhD in criminology who has a special interest in myth busting.
And so how did he become involved in the spinach Popeye story?
So he was preparing some citations regarding the introduction to a talk on the impact of bad data on policymaking, and he had given this at Manchester University. He used the SPIDES story as an example, but when he tried to get citations for the origins of SPIDES, he noticed a very disturbing lack of primary sources. After a few weeks, he found that all roads led to a 1981 BMJ article by Hamblin, and this article in turn had some very sketchy sources that we'll get into in a little bit. He emailed Hamblin, who stated he couldn't remember who had told him the myth in the first place, but that he was pretty sure he didn't make it up. Sutton then took an obsessive turn and reread all the original Popeye comics from 1928 to 1935 and began reviewing several different original biochemistry and nutrition journal articles from that time.
So let's try to walk through this and find out as close as we can what the truth is about spinach and iron content first, and then address the Popeye part of the story. So help us out, Bob, here. Help us out on the spinach iron part of the myth. Was there a German scientist named Erich von Wolff mentioned in the book Half-Life of Facts?
Yes and no. There appears to have been a typo from the book you had read. The real name of the German scientist was Emil Theodor von Wolff, spelled with two Fs, and there was only a single F written in the book.
Well, did he actually calculate the iron content in spinach?
Yes, he calculated the iron content from burnt spinach residue.
And is there evidence that von Wolff, with two Fs here, made any kind of transcription error?
There is not any primary evidence of this error. If we believe what Sutton's investigation showed, there's also no secondary or tertiary evidence of von Wolff making this error prior to the BMJ article.
So how did this error get into the literature at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century?
So based on Sutton's investigation, it appears this was actually based on a confusing table in a 1934 paper from the University of Wisconsin by Sherman et al. They reported iron contents for dry and fresh spinach.
Okay, this is starting to get confusing. What's this about the dry and the fresh spinach measurement stuff?
So spinach's iron content is based on how much is in 100 grams of spinach. The dry measurements of spinach's iron content are much higher since the water content's gone. The paper by Sherman is very confusing as to whether he's referring to dried or fresh spinach, but does report a value of iron in spinach that is more consistent with our current value seen in dried spinach.
So do we know who corrected the error in the 1930s?
So another American, Kohler et al., issued a paper 2 years later in 1936. They modified the chemical method of extracting the iron from a spinach sample and also used fresh spinach. Their results are consistent with our current accepted fresh spinach values of iron content.
So talk to us about this 1981 BMJ article by Dr. Hamblin called Fake.
So essentially, when the BMJ does its holiday article every year, it's supposed to be lighthearted and less meticulously researched, like the parachute article we were talking about earlier. They approached Dr. Hamblin asking for a humorous piece, but didn't ask him to provide any references. He did actually give 13 references to the article, but none of them specifically aimed at the origins of the SPIDES story.
And so who is Dr. T.J. Hamblin then?
So he was a very well-published immunohematologist who specialized in his work on CLL.
And where did he get his information for the story then?
This is where it starts to break down. When Sutton emailed Hamblin in 2010, 2 years prior to his death, Hamblin was very unclear and stated he couldn't recall his source, but was sure he had heard it once or possibly read it in the Reader's Digest.
But apparently the story may have come from a Professor Bender.
Yes. It appears that in 1972, during an inaugural lecture and an article in The Spectator in 1977, Professor Bender reiterated the SPIDES story, but stated the error was fixed in 1937 by Professor Schuppan. There is no record of who this Professor Schuppan was or where his correction came from. Bender incorrectly cites a paper that measures the iron oxide, not iron content, of spinach.
Okay, this is really, really confusing. I mean, does spinach even contain iron?
Oh, yeah. Here's the quote from Sutton's paper. Iron levels for fresh spinach are around 2.75 milligrams per 100 grams based on the U.S. Department of Agriculture 2009. Once dried, however, spinach contains substantially more milligrams of iron per 100 grams, just like dried herbs that contain far more concentrated flavor by weight and volume than when they're fresh.
All right, so let's summarize things to this point.
Okay, so it is a myth that spinach is incredibly high in iron. However, there does not seem to be any evidence that a decimal or transcription error was made by Dr. von Wolff.
All right, so we've covered the iron part in spinach and that it is a myth that spinach is high in iron. That part is true. It is a myth, right? But von Wolff didn't play a role in that, it seems. Now let's take a look at the Popeye part of the story. Who was Popeye and when was he created?
Popeye started as a character in a comic strip in 1929 by Sagar. He was added into an already existing comic strip that had been around since 1919 called Thimble Theater. This might be why Sutton's analysis of the cartoons started 1 year prior to Popeye's debut in 1929. Popeye is a strong sailor man that's well known for having a gruff way of talking and a deep love of spinach, although this love of spinach was not in the comic strips until 1932.
So where does Popeye get his strength?
So Sagar actually goes out of his way in the first comic panel that Popeye eats spinach in to say that, quote, "Spinach is full of vitamin A, and that's what makes humans strong and healthy." Spinach does contain a large amount of beta-carotene, which in turn becomes vitamin A.
So that was a great impersonation, by the way. So there was no radioactive spider bite, no gamma radiation burst, or iron in spinach that made him super strong?
No, sir.
So where does this idea of Popeye being Iron Man come from?
So this comes from another panel in 1931 where Popeye's doctor says he has a cast iron interior, and another panel in 1932 where Popeye states he's an Iron Man in the sense of being a really tough guy.
All right, so let's summarize the Popeye part of the story then.
So he does eat spinach for his strength, but it was the vitamin A through beta-carotene, not iron in spinach.
All right, so give us a bottom line.
Popeye is strong to the finish because he eats his spinach that contains beta-carotene. Spinach is not high in iron content, but can be part of a healthy diet.
So can you provide us with a case resolution?
Absolutely. You support this sailor presenting for an employment physical to eat spinach as a healthy component to a balanced diet, but not as an independent factor for increased strength or health. You also encourage him to stop pipe smoking and work on his other muscle groups besides just his forearms.
And it's now time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Nathan Finnerty, a PGY3 from Ohio State University Emergency Medicine Program. He knew that Heinrich Quincke was the German physician credited for introducing the lumbar puncture for diagnostic and therapeutic purposes. Bob, what's the Keener contest this week?
Keeping with our nautical food theme, what is the reason British sailors are referred to as limeys?
Excellent question. If you know the answer, send it to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thank you very much, Bob, for bringing more clarity to the Popeye and spinach story.
Thanks, Ken. It's been great. To close, I know myth-busting a fictional character's love of a vegetable might seem a little less clinically relevant than some of the other subjects on the SGEM, but I do think it does a great job of highlighting some of the dangers in the medical field regarding evidence. For over three decades, this myth, super myth actually, was perpetuated all because of a highly respected expert's claim. With the internet, we have the greatest repository of human knowledge at our fingertips, and it's never been easier to fact-check sources and lower the barriers to knowledge and knowledge translation. So, I hope the Spides myth can serve as a reminder to everyone out there of the SGEM tagline.
Yeah, and this whole story started with me reading Samuel Arbuthnot's book, The Half-Life of Facts, which was an excellent read. And he found out after his book went to press that the information about spinach, Popeye, iron, and the decimal error story, or Spides, was not correct. And he's addressed this in a Wired magazine article, updated his book, and credited Mike Sutton. I'll put some links in the show notes for further reading.
Arsman seemed good about correcting his mistakes and said it reminded him of a former professor that had lectured, quote, his classes on a certain scientific topic on a Tuesday. On Wednesday, he read a paper that was published and that invalidated the lecture. On Thursday, he went into class and told his students, "Remember what I told you on Tuesday? It's wrong. And if that worries you, you need to get out of science," end quote.
Sounds like a wise professor. Well, that's it for 2015 and the holiday edition of the SGEM. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday and gets to spend some time with family and friends. The SGEM will be back early in 2016 with another hot off the press episode. This time, it'll be on asthma. But until then, Bob, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
He's stronger than a fish, 'cause he eats his spinach. He's Popeye the Sailor.